Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are staying dry. It just started raining like crazy outside.
It is raining sideways outside right now.
Okay, hopefully the power doesn't go out.
Well, we're recording on a laptop, so.
Oh, that's fair. All right, cool. Yeah. Power, go out. Cool, man. Well, like I said at the end of yesterday's episode, we have a whole hell of a lot to get through with this minute.
All right.
So let us dive into it. We are, of course, talking about minute 18 through 19 of Dune Part 2. And
we have a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, we do. We are on the tail end of a prescient vision from Paul, a little baby prescient vision, a little small one.
As a treat.
Yeah, just a little morsel of a little morsel of a prescient vision. And this minute starts with Jessica playing the role of the audience by asking, "What is happening?" And Paul snaps out of his prescient vision. We cut back to Chani and her friends, and I love this interaction. Her friend, who I don't think we've gotten a name for her friend yet. We have?
Yes.
Okay. What is the? I must not have notated it then.
So, Chani's friend in this scene is someone that I talked about at the end of yesterday's episode, where it was a book character, incredibly minor, but was written for the movie, almost to act as like a sounding board for Chani and like a very close confidant and friend of hers. I am speaking, of course, of Shishkali.
Shishkali, yes.
Originally written as a young male, but Denis decided to cast Suhila Yaqub, making the character a friend and confidant of Chani in Dune Part 2. And we will definitely see more and more of Shishkali throughout this movie.
Oh, for sure. Yep. So Shishkali goes, "Too spicy for the foreigner," referring to the porridge stuff. That Paul was eating.
The porridge, carrot, beetroot.
Yeah, right. Now, I know they're talking about spice in the Dune universe, which it has been said has a cinnamon aroma to it. I don't think much has been said about the heat level of spice. But you and I have frequented a restaurant here in Atlanta.
We frequented many restaurants here in Atlanta.
Sure. But one in particular that came to mind is a lovely place called Northern China Eatery.
Yes.
Which specializes in, as the name would suggest, food from the north of China.
Also, highly recommended by Anthony Bourdain, and I believe it was Reservations, or was it The Layover?
It was one of the two. I can't remember.
But, point is, if you're ever in Atlanta, or if you live here in Atlanta, go check out Northern China Eatery. It is fantastic. It's also a restaurant beneath an eyeglasses store.
Yeah, it looks a little sketchy on the outside.
It looks sketchy as fuck, but hands down one of our favorite places.
Yeah. The reason I bring it up is because I have 100% had food there that made me react the same way that Paul is reacting
right
now.
Bro, you and I, last time we were there, just like both of us were like,
Well, it's one of those things, like if the Szechuan peppercorns have this property to them, where if you eat too much of it too quickly, your mouth goes numb.
Yep.
And if you eat way too much of it, you can start sweating and, like people have said, hallucinating and stuff. So it is crazy. It's crazy delicious.
And for the record, Zach and I are not black peppers is spicy.
No, I can handle spice.
Wedding. Yeah. So like this shit. Actually, like, if you don't know what you're doing, we'll fuck you up.
Yeah. So I really empathize.
But it's so good.
It's delicious.
It's so good.
I empathize with Paul in this moment. I've been there, bud. I got it. The group laughs. So Shishkali and the group.
Shishkali and Chani and the rest of
the
kids, youths.
The kids' table.
The kids' table. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Chani, importantly, does not laugh at this. She kind of gives Shishkali a little bit of a side eye.
Well, Shishkali's like, he'll look pretty with blue eyes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then she's like, yep. Chani's like, hold on, he deserves our respect. He's a good fighter. And then Shishkali kind of gives Chani like a, ooh, you like him kind of look. And Chani just is like, nah.
Before we gloss over it, Paul gives us his best Keanu Reeves impression with his, whoa.
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 There's spice in the food.
Yeah.
And we do see the spice particles in the porridge that Paul is eating.
And I want to talk about that. Okay. So one, you didn't see that earlier? Because it's pretty fucking prominent.
Yeah. It's it's very like in your face.
Yeah. Two, it looks like the gold leaf that douchey restaurants will put on like a banana split or something to make it $200.
Yeah.
I would for sure eat it, but I'm just saying it looks like that. So yeah, interesting.
Paul's just fucking drinking Goldschlager.
Yeah, exactly. Goldschlager porridge, I guess.
Ugh. Oh God.
Again, Jessica is asking, what is it? She's, you know, not understanding what's going on, even though I feel like she should, because they've had a number of conversations.
She's seen him
about
trip balls several times at this point.
Yeah. So, okay. Get with it, Jessica. Keep up. But then we cut back to the conversation, or we have the conversation with Chani and her friends. Don't mock him. He's a good fighter. And then Stilgar enters the room.
Woman.
Come with me. I guess it was a very, he must be looking directly at Jessica, because that could mean any one of them in this room. People have names for a reason. Use their names.
I don't know, like, if Paul and Jessica had, well, Paul's name was known, but I don't know if Jessica's name was known, or if it was more of a dismissive, like, because Stilgar definitely has a lot of respect for Paul, but maybe not so much for Jessica at this point.
He's got respect. I mean, I think they have the same type of respect. They know they're good fighters, but they're also fish out of water here.
Yeah.
But we don't linger on this conversation too much.
No, we have something way more important to talk about.
Yeah. So we cut to a shot of a long table with a basin carved in the middle of it. The basin has the same inscriptions that the walls do.
Mm-hmm.
The prayers and chants and whatever.
Prayers and prophecies.
Yes, prayers and prophecies. And then we get to see your boy Jameis Tego all wrapped up, lowered into the basin, and the people around him, the attendants or nuns or whatever you want to call it. I think the subtitles say nuns throughout this scene.
Mm-hmm.
They're like chanting in a call and response style.
Yep.
So the subtitles that we get, hooray, subtitles are back.
Some of them, not
some
all
of them. Yes, not all of them. We get to the well, our water we return. And then the response is, we bless our brother Jameis. And I had a hard time picking up on the audio, but I think these things, or at least that we bless our brother Jameis part, is repeated a number of times throughout the next minute.
You definitely hear the Jameis line repeated many times throughout all of this.
Yeah. So the cloth is removed from the body, and we see the face of Jameis for the first time this movie.
Yep.
Babs is back, baby. Love this actor. I'm not going to butcher his last name, but his first name is Babs.
Babs Olusanmokun is not only here for this scene, but we will see him later on, of course, as well.
Yep.
Unfortunate that, you know, Jameis made the decision that he did, but ultimately, you know,
it serves a major purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we get a shot of some jewelry being removed.
Yes.
Now
we do.
I have a lot to say about this. I assume you also have a lot to say about
Art and Soul's got a couple things to talk about.
All right, go for it.
Go for it.
Want some gopher?
Unfortunately, Art and Soul doesn't really have too much to say about the actual pendant itself that is removed. but it is listed as a water ring. And the water masters are the ones that are, I guess in this case, the nuns that the subtitles refer to in this entire scene and everything here.
Yeah.
We do get some specific instructions on the burial process, though I don't know if I want to go into it just yet, simply because it's we're crossing into multi-minute territory. Yeah,
let's save that for tomorrow, because I have a good amount on the water tokens.
Yeah.
So obviously water is a very, very sacred thing to the Fremen.
Sure.
One of the ways that they show, and I'm going to call it wealth, but it's not wealth per se. It's more like responsibility or investment into the tribe and the person, is that people are allotted amounts of water. And this is to either use when they go scouting, or to, you know, give to family and friends. It's often used as like a dowry for marriages. So these water tokens are how they keep track of how much, you know, again, quote unquote, wealth that a person has within the Fremen tribes.
Sure.
So I have a passage from the book here. And it's a little bit of a long one, but it goes a long way to explain what's going on right here. So the reading is, Stilgar extended a small piece of metal rings in one palm. Paul looked at them, seeing the different sizes, the way that the light of the glow globe reflected off of them.
We don't have glow globes in this scene. They're too, like, hanging.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the difference in the book. I told you the book is littered with glow globes. So, back to the
reading. As it should be.
Chani took the largest ring and held it on her finger. 30 liters, she said. One by one, she took the others, showing each to Paul, counting them. 2 liters, 1 liters, 7 water counters of 1 drachm each, 1 water counter of 3/32 of a drachm. In all, 33 liters and 7 3/32 drachms of water. So pause there for a second.
But they do need to be that specific.
They are that specific about how much water a person is allotted. She held them up on her finger for Paul to see. Do you accept them? Stilgar asked. Paul swallowed and nodded yes. Later, Chani said, I will show you how to tie them in a kerchief so they won't rattle around and give you away when we need silence. She extended her hand. Will you hold on to them for me? Paul asked. Chani turned a startled glance on Stilgar. Stilgar smiled and said, he does not yet know our ways. Chani, hold his water counters without commitment until it is time to show him the manner of carrying them. So, end of reading. So basically, Paul in the book here just proposed to Chani inadvertently. That is what you do when you want to marry someone.
Surprise!
You give them your water. That is, you know, joining the finances, I guess, of the family. But each of these rings denotes a particular amount of water that that a person has in their possession. So Jameis had 33 some odd liters of the tribe's water.
Yeah,
it's water rings. Very quick little scene. Very quick little shot of the rings being taken off his body, but they have immense importance to the Fremen. Cool. So that's water rings. So what happens next?
Well, so in the sequence of everything that happens, and this is something that Art and Soul says that Denis wanted to be incredibly well-rehearsed and shot like it was like an actual burial, like of... with the amount of reverence and attention that would be, you know, given to the real thing.
Yeah.
Jameis is unwrapped. His body is laid on the table. The very first thing that happens is that his kris knife is removed with the reverence that it deserves.
Yeah.
And the remaining ornaments, including his water rings, are removed from his body. One thing of note, and I don't think we see this in the movie, but the water master holds essentially a bar covered in these water rings.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that there is some kind of way of either tracking the water or then redistributing it as needed later on down the line.
Sure.
The body is removed from the bag. Straps are undone to take the still suit off of James's body, but we do see scissors cut one of the main central lines on the still suit.
Yeah, and I didn't know what that was for.
Well, it's to take the water out of the still suit to then repurpose elsewhere.
It seems like they would have some other way of getting it out without damaging the suit.
You would think.
Yeah.
But I imagine that those lines are probably interchangeable. Not unlike hoses in like your car.
Yeah, yeah. But if someone needed to use that suit, then they have to replace that hose, and that's sure. other resources. So
yeah.
That part stood out to me. I was like, why are they just cutting this?
The straps are undone to reveal James's face.
Mm-hmm.
And we quickly see a wax or some kind of like honey or whatever spread across his eyes, nose, and mouth.
Yep.
To create a body seal.
Yeah. And we
they also do it on his ears and everything as well.
Yeah. So it goes on clear and then it quickly solidifies into like a white, translucent,
almost pinkish kind of
wax. Was it pink?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And interesting to note, we saw something similar in Dune Prophecy when Raquella was being prepared for burial.
Mm-hmm.
The same kind of goop was was applied. The goop. Yeah, it was applied to her face.
Yeah. Jameis is then sandwiched between two very thin, almost like sheets,
mm-hmm.
I would call them. And we begin to, you know, begin the water extraction process from the body.
Yeah, and like they start
vacuum sealed, and you kind of see his body begin to like get pulled into this seal, and water begins to. We hear the air being removed first through the pipes, and then the air quickly turns to water.
I wrote down, it looks like he's being prepared for a sous vide. So we had Jameis to go, and now he's going to become Jameis sous vide.
Fair.
Yeah, and like before the air starts to get pulled out, we see him put like these little devices strategically over like around his body or across his body. And they look similar, not exactly, but to the like the heart monitors that you would get at the hospital. Like these little like patches with, you know, tubes and wires coming out of them.
Yep.
And that is what, starts the suction process. Now, water does start to flow through this once the air is gone.
Yeah, and it flows very quickly.
Yes.
This is a very efficient process. Unfortunately, this is one of those minutes that I really wish wasn't cut off halfway through the scene.
Sure.
But we are cut off as the water begins to, you know, flush through the tubes and everything. So we will have to come back to tomorrow's episode to finish the rest of this process.
Yeah.
In the what Art and Soul calls the Room of the Dead.
Room of the Dead. Very cool. I'm going to take this moment to talk about an important scene in the book that we're missing from the movie.
Okay.
And that is the Friend of Jameis scene.
Yes.
I think this is a good place as any to talk about it because it does technically happen a little bit before this in the book. So I don't know why they left this out, because I was waiting for it. When I first watched this movie, it's a very, very, very important scene in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I have ideas about why they left it out, and I'll get to that at the end. But the Friend of Jameis scene is basically the eulogy that we get for Jameis. All of his belongings are placed in like a pile or on a table in front of the group. And anyone who knew Jameis, had interactions with him, or had a story to tell, they would stand up, take one of his belongings, because they're the tribes at this point. You know, they go back to the people, and tell your short story about how Jameis affected you in life. It's a very moving scene. We hear a lot of story, or a few stories, about how he gave water to people when they were thirsty. So gave his own water to other people who he did not need to do that. He saved people when they were injured. He caused distractions so that the injured could be removed from battles. Like all these things. And even Jessica gets up and says, he taught my son, or he spared his life in some certain ways. So, but it always begins with, I was a friend of Jameis. And then you tell your story.
Yeah.
Which, again, very symbolic, very poetic even.
Yeah.
The whole time that they're doing this, people are looking at Paul like, are you going to fucking get up there and say something, man? You need to get up there and say something. And he is like, I don't know if I should, because technically
I just killed this guy
like, you know, 15 minutes ago or whatever.
Yeah.
It's longer than that. But eventually he does get up and he starts off with I was a friend of Jameis. From the pile of belongings, he takes a baliset that was Jameis's. And he makes the book goes to lengths to say that Paul was a little bit surprised to see a baliset there. He was like, oh, I didn't know he played. And then he thought about Gurney, mm-hmm. and how multiple people in his life, people who he looks up to and who have taught him a lot of things, played the baliset.
They fucking rock out, dude.
Yeah. So it holds some symbolic significance to Paul as well. But what he says about Jameis is pretty moving. He says, Jameis taught me that when you kill, you pay for it. I wish I'd known Jameis better, which is a great, you know, great thing for him to say.
Yeah, because Jameis was the first man Paul ever killed.
Yeah, knowingly.
Yeah.
And that line, I think we get that line or something similar to that in a flashback or flash forward to when DJ's on the screen.
That will be episode, I believe it's 100. So we will have a lot more to talk about then.
Okay. I was thinking it was from last movie, but it's later on in this. Okay, cool.
Yeah. There definitely is.
I thought when they were going right up to the fight, I thought he said something similar to this. Pause here. We're going to do a little bit of research. Okay. So that this is a sentiment that was shared a little bit, you know, in some form or fashion in the last movie. When you take a life, you pay for it.
Yeah.
Now, what he does after this is really important. He cries. Now, from the movie, we have already seen that you do not waste your body's water. If from the vomit scene earlier from Jessica. Mm-hmm. This is a very, very, very important thing for the Fremen, and they all make a big to-do about him shedding water for the dead.
Yeah.
This is one of the most respectful and just symbolic, I guess, whatever things that you can do for someone. So this gains him a lot of respect amongst the Fremen people in this moment.
Which is very interesting because the movie has a different way of approaching shedding water for the dead. And yes. We will talk about that more later.
Yep. Yep. So this will come back up, I think next week. And it's, this is really important. And so I was really, I wanted this scene in the book. Mm-hmm. I wanted this scene in the movie because it's so, so important. I feel like I know why they left it out. Because we want to have this derision from the Fremen to Paul last longer.
Yeah.
We want the stakes to be a little bit higher when, you know, we do see the come around later.
In the movie, he needs to earn it over longer periods of time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because he's getting pretty respected within the Fremen up at this point in the book. Not totally, but he's not, you know, some punk ass little kid anymore. He's just a punk ass, you know, young Fremen at this point.
Sure.
So I understand, you know, why it maybe didn't necessarily fit, but it is still a great, 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 great scene in the book, that I think is worth noting.
I would definitely say it's a miss not being in the movie, but
yeah, you know. At least even the phrase, I was a friend.
I was a friend of Jameis. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's what I was wanting. I was wanting that friend of Jameis phrase a lot. It was just so, yeah, it's important.
Yeah.
But anywho, that is the end of my book notes. I have a fair amount more for tomorrow and a whole heck of a lot more for next week.
Well, I don't think this one goes down as our longest
episode. No, it doesn't, but it's close. We're, you know, about the 30-minute mark of record time. So.
Alrighty. Yeah, and Art and Soul, you know, not to divvy up too much, but some of the stuff that we talked about today, especially with the water rings, will be relevant once again tomorrow in how the movie handled more of the water rings. But we'll talk about that on tomorrow's episode.
All right, cool.
In the meantime, you can find us online on Blue Sky. We are at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch. We would love to hear from you if you ever have any questions or feedback or comments about the show. Also, we don't talk about this enough, but if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, give the show, you know, a 5-star rating, share it with your friends, you know, anyone that you know that likes sci-fi or Dune at all. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they would probably enjoy the show and all of the content that we have. So
I think it's important to note when you're talking about ratings on iTunes, write us a little note on there. You know, iTunes and Apple, they like to know that these reviews are coming from a human.
Yeah, because if you just do the rating, I don't think it really counts it.
It counts, but it doesn't do much in the way of bumping the show up in lists or getting it in front of people when they're searching for things. So, if you are so inclined to leave us a review, we much appreciate it. And the only request is to just jot a little note, even if it's like, great job, folks, or Zach's jokes are dumb. It's fine. Anything helps.
Or just the thumbs up emoji.
Yeah, exactly. All right, cool. Well, we will be back tomorrow. So, see you then.
See ya.